The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
To public education, and whereas the Nova Scotia Teachers Union and other education partners have initiated an online petition to allow Nova Scotians the opportunity to publicly show their support for students, therefore be it resolved that all members of this House of Assembly show that support for public education in this province by signing the online petition, Kids Not Cuts. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice, passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. I hear several no's. The motion is tabled. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 9:11 on the Speaker's clock. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when the Premier took office in June of 2009, people were paying $1.05 per litre to fill up the car. Today, people are paying $1.43 per litre in Halifax, Mr. Speaker, and more in the rest of the province. That's an increase of 38 cents per litre, and people are bracing for even higher prices, Mr. Speaker, in the coming days and weeks. So my question to the Premier, why is the Premier not taking any steps to provide Nova Scotians with the relief at the pumps?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as the Leader of the Opposition knows, the price of gasoline is tied to the world price of oil. That is continuing to go up. He's no doubt aware that in Montreal, for example, the price was $1.47. He knows full well that one of the reasons why we have the gas pricing regime that we have is because when the Liberals were in power, they put the HST on top of the motor fuel taxes. They brought in the single largest increase in gas taxes in the history of the province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, the Premier knows that there are measures that he can take to provide Nova Scotians with relief at the pumps. He could remove the tax on tax, as he promised to do, Mr. Speaker, when he was in opposition. He could immediately deregulate the gas market, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, these two measures combined would give Nova Scotians approximately 5 cents per litre savings, Mr. Speaker, and they're in the hands of the Premier. My question to the Premier is, we are all bracing for higher gas prices tonight at midnight, Mr. Speaker. What is the Premier going to do to give Nova Scotians some relief?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition continues to attack the regime of regulation of gas in the province, which has led to lower prices for our province, Mr. Speaker. If the Leader of the Opposition had his way, he would like to have the big oil companies setting the price of gas.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, you mean like the Premier did last week, writing a check to Big Oil and Darko, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if the Leader of the Opposition had his way, he'd let the market set the price and not inflate it like this government is doing, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, let's be clear. The Premier said that the tax on tax was an immoral tax, Mr. Speaker. He also knows that Nova Scotians are paying artificially high prices because of regulation. He also knows that since taking office, He's hiked the HST, Mr. Speaker, meaning people are paying more for gas because of the actions he's taken, Mr. Speaker. If the Premier can make gas more expensive for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, he can also make gas a little more affordable for Nova Scotians. So my question to the Premier, when will the Premier give Nova Scotians a break? When will he finally remove the tax on tax and scrap gas regulation in the province?
Honourable the Premier.
I pointed out, Mr. Speaker, what this leader of the opposition would like to do is he would like to place in the hands of Big Oil the right to dictate the prices to the people of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. And on top of that, Mr. Speaker, he'd like to close the refinery in Dartmouth.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services. When it comes to potential child abuse, Mr. Speaker, the protection of our children should be priority number one. When serious allegations are made, it's important that steps be taken instantly to protect our youngest and most vulnerable children, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister, does the Minister agree that when she is made aware of something as serious as potential child abuse or a potential child abuser working at a daycare, that it is her responsibility to take steps to protect those children?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Certainly, and that's exactly what we did.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Regarding the East Preston daycare, just such allegations have been made. An alleged child abuser has been found to be working there. It appears that the Minister's Department knew of this situation well in advance of when that alleged abuser was removed. My question to the Minister, what steps did the Minister take to notify the daycare that there was an alleged child abuser working there, and what other steps did she take to protect those children?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Certainly, any situation like this is of grave concern to us, and we took the exact steps that are available to us, and that is to contact the RCMP who investigated the situation, and that is the legal route you take in this province and in this nation.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that's all well and good, but my question is, what steps did the Minister take to ensure that the children at the East Preston daycare were safe? Not what steps did she take to inform the RCMP about the fact that there was an alleged abuser continuing to work at the East Preston daycare. So I will ask again, what steps did the Minister take when she became aware of the alleged abuser at East Preston daycare, and when did she take them?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, is the Honourable Member questioning the role of the RCMP in our province, that they don't have the capability to investigate? And I also would remind the Honourable Member that there's a word here called allege. And I guess he's questioning our Constitution that you are considered innocent until proven guilty. Shame on him for questioning that. And I do hope nobody ever alleges him of anything.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, power rates continue to rise. In January, we saw our seventh rate increase in a decade. Mr. Speaker, there are no signs of it stopping. Mr. Speaker, Lower Churchill Agreement potentially could be good for Nova Scotia, but it is 5 years away, Mr. Speaker. Meanwhile, Hydro-Quebec has surplus power available at reduced prices that would help Nova Scotia reduce its reliance on coal-fired generation sooner, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, is the Premier examining the possibility of importing power from Quebec to reduce our dependency on coal and lower power bills for Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the Leader of the Liberal Party would be aware, the Leader of the Opposition would be aware that, in fact, we signed a memorandum of understanding with the former Liberal government in New Brunswick for the upgrades to the transmission line that would, in fact, make it possible for us to take a greater amount of power out of Quebec if it were available at a price that would be cheaper than is here. You should also know that currently, Emera already does that. When there's a
need for surplus power in the province, they go out into the market, they find out where the cheapest power is. Sometimes that comes from Quebec and is used in order to do exactly that, underwrite the prices in the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, and I am well aware of the investments that are taking place in infrastructure not only in this province but all across the Atlantic seaboard. Mr. Speaker, there are jurisdictions not only in this country but in the United States who are taking advantage of cheap power out of Quebec. We've heard this Premier talk an awful lot about the Lower Churchill project going on in Newfoundland, and all of us in this hopes that will bring stability to pricing in Atlantic Canada. My question, though, to the Premier was, what has he done to make sure that we are getting access to stable energy prices out of Quebec that will lower power bills now, not 5 years from now?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, I'll repeat what I just said. Part of the problem with trying to take more power out of Quebec is we simply don't have the transmission capacity to be able to do that. But where it is to the economic advantage of the province, we do it. The Emera negotiates for the best price on the market in order to be able to keep the prices in Nova Scotia as low as is possible. He would be aware that there are other issues associated with bringing in Quebec power, which includes shutting down facilities in Nova Scotia, which would strand costs, which then go back into the rate base and up the actual price of the power out of Quebec. And I realize those things are somewhat technical in nature, but I want them to be assured that the Department of Energy is very aware that a regional energy system ultimately will benefit Nova Scotians, and in fact it will benefit all Nova Scotians. So the Lower Churchill allows us to have options, allows us to have options that otherwise would not be available.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Speaker, I would agree with the Premier that the fact the Lower Churchill will provide us with options into the future. What we're asking about is, well, how are we going to respond to the power crisis Nova Scotia families are finding themselves in? Speaker, as the Premier is well aware, he should be well aware, as he mentioned in one of his statements, there is upgrades already happening in transmission. There is extra capacity in the province of New Brunswick coming into the province of Nova Scotia. He should also be well aware that right now there are two generators in Lingan that are shut down, Mr. Speaker. There's absolutely no reason, quite frankly, those generators could not remain closed. And we could import power from Quebec at a lower rate that would impact directly on power bills today. Give Nova Scotians a break on their power bills by engaging Quebec to bring in cheap hydropower.
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'll just repeat again. This already takes place. Emera goes out into the marketplace where they have a need for excess power. They bring that into the province at the rate that is established on the open market. And, of course, one of the great things about the fact that we are developing not only the transmission system but the sources of power is that Nova Scotians will finally get off of what has been essentially a pipeline for cash out of Nova Scotia to flow to Venezuela. That's what we were left with by 20 years of inaction by the other parties.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last evening, Mr. Speaker, Capital District Health Authority reported that once again dealing with severe overcrowding at Dartmouth General. 19 patients were admitted to the hospital for which there were no beds. Mr. Speaker, patients were transferred from the facility throughout the district. Operating at 120% capacity is not possible, but sadly, Mr. Speaker, that occurrence is becoming more and more frequent in Dartmouth. My question to the Premier, has the Premier asked the Minister of Health and Wellness to evaluate, not monitor, but evaluate the impact on the entire system of these more and more frequent occurrences at the Dartmouth General Hospital?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, of course, the Department of Health is always doing an analysis of the resources that they have and the way that they supply them. It's one of the reasons why we announced last year that we were completing a study so that we could move forward with using space that is already available at the Dartmouth General. This has been something that we have, people in Dartmouth, in fact, have been asking for quite some time.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, last night was a double whammy for wait times. Not only did patients have to wait for beds, Mr. Speaker, only to be transferred throughout the district, surgeries were cancelled, Mr. Speaker, not only impacting on those that were being prepared for surgeries there, but continuing to back up the wait list for surgeries in Dartmouth, Mr. Speaker. The CEO of the Capital District Health, when that announcement was made by this government, said, we're not increasing capacity. All we're actually doing is moving, shuffling the chairs on the deck, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in all Nova Scotia today, the Deputy Minister of Health delivered a slightly different message, though, somehow indicating that capacity could be added, but said sometime into the future. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier admit that given the ongoing challenges at the Dartmouth General, now is the time to start planning for extra capacity, not sometime into the future?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I just pointed out, all that work is done on an ongoing basis. In fact, one of the reasons we're looking forward to having the opening of the existing floor in the Dartmouth General is to provide, of course, those resources that are necessary for the hospital.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Deputy Minister said we'll be 5 years plus before we see any difference. The CEO of the Capital District Health Authority said, Mr. Speaker, they're not opening new beds, it's shuffling the chairs on the deck. So my question to the Premier, can the Premier ensure this House that when they open beds at the Dartmouth General, they will not be closing other beds in the Capital District Health Authority?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in the mid-1990s, I had the privilege of serving on the board of the Dartmouth General Hospital, Mr. Speaker. And at that time, the Liberal government took so much money out of the system that we had to use money that was designated for capital, like opening the resources on the fifth floor, in order to support the operating budget, Mr. Speaker. Those are decisions made by the former Liberal government that we are still living with today.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Community Services. The Minister has a duty to protect children, Mr. Speaker. It is their innocence that matters here, not the innocence of an alleged abuser. Immediately informing the daycare when she became aware of these allegations would have been the right thing to do so that the daycare could remove that person from the scene and protect those children while the case was ongoing. That is what the law says, Mr. Speaker. And so my question to the minister is, when exactly did the minister become aware that there was an alleged abuser employed at the East Preston daycare, and when after that did she take steps to tell the daycare?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I indicated earlier, we took the appropriate steps. We took the process that is the process here in Nova Scotia and Canada, and that was going to the RCMP, who therefore went forward and did an investigation, and there was nothing on record to give them the ability to go forward to the daycare centre. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it has become apparent that the parents whose children attend the East Preston daycare found out through the media that an employee there was named in a lawsuit as an alleged abuser. And I will table the memo that was sent to parents from the board of directors of the East Preston daycare, which says, and I quote, "We became aware of these allegations in June 2011 when the news media contacted the daycare, not the minister, not her department, but the news media." And I will table that memo for the benefit of the minister and the House. And so my question to the minister is this: when did she become aware that a potential child abuser was working at East Preston daycare, and why did she not take steps to tell the daycare?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As I have said before, as soon as the department was aware of the allegations, we immediately went to the RCMP. The RCMP did their job. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the RCMP may be doing their job, but clearly this minister is not doing her job, because she has a duty to inform the daycare when she becomes aware that they may have an alleged abuser working at the daycare. And so my question to the minister is, why did she fail to do her job and protect those kids?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Once again, it's our role in the Department of Community Services. We look after children. I'm a mother myself. I do understand the seriousness of the situation, and that's why I took the appropriate route and went to the RCMP, because that is their job, and they have the capacity and the ability and the legal right to investigate. So we took the exact steps that were the appropriate steps. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, last week's federal budget from the Harper Conservative means significant changes to the employment insurance benefits in the future. Our fisheries are comprised of mainly seasonal workers, so employment insurance benefits are critical to seeing them through the off-season. My question to the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture is, what discussions has the Minister had with his federal counterparts about this issue and its potential negative impact to our fishing sectors?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Well, thank you very much to the member opposite. I appreciate the question. And I can assure you that any particular topic that's related to our fisheries, that I had great discussions with our federal minister, and not only on this particular topic, but the topic of owner-operator and fleet separation policy, something that we're bringing forward and strongly to our federal minister, and I encourage the members opposite to do the same.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, has been made very clear from the Harper Conservatives. The changes planned for the employment insurance program will see benefits reduced for seasonal workers who attempt to stay in communities where work opportunities are slim. Nova Scotians and coastal communities are already hurting from the NDP regime, and now the federal Conservative government seeks to hurt them further. So my question again to the minister is, what specifically is the minister doing to provide representation for workers in our fishing industries and fish processing sectors to stop the negative impact this will have on coastal communities?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Again, thank you very much, and to the member opposite, I want to, first of all, recognize the question, the importance of this question, not only unemployment insurance, but also the issue that we have been very strong and firm on, the owner-operating fleet separation policy. And I encourage the member opposite to be that vocal on this particular issue, because it's one thing that is the cornerstone of a policy that protects coastal communities across Nova Scotia is that. And I encourage the member opposite, also the third party, who have been very silent on this issue, to stand up to the microphone and protect coastal communities in Nova Scotia. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there's no question that we all support the owner-operator principle, but the minister should be aware that if these EI changes take effect, that it's going to have a significant impact on the industry today, not into the future. Mr. Speaker, our fishing industries are critical to the economy of Nova Scotia. We need to be helping people working in these industries, not hampering them. Workers in the industry are upset and alarmed, and we're not hearing anything from the minister on this specific matter. So my question again to the minister, what is the NDP government's plan to address this problem when the federal government implements these changes to the EI system?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And to the member opposite, I really am pleased to talk about the fishery here today. And I also want to talk, this is an important issue that we'll be bringing loud and clear to our federal counterpart, which we have. And I also want to just reset this and say that the owner-operator fleet separation policy is the cornerstone of this industry. And from Cape Breton to the Grand Banks, to George's Banks, this is something that we've stood up for, the independent fishermen, and I encourage the member opposite to do the same. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the safety of our children is paramount. If a situation arises that in any way threatens the safety of a child, all members of this House would agree that it must be dealt with immediately and responsibly. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Community Services, when did her department know that an alleged child abuser worked at a daycare, and what, if anything, did they do about it?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as you know, I've already answered this. I said as soon as we were informed, we immediately took action, and we went through the process. That is the process, that's the right process, and that's go to our RCMP, and because that's what they're there for, they have the capacity and skill and the know-how to do investigations. That's exactly what we did. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, these allegations are an alarm bell. If this minister can't hear that and find a way to separate an alleged child abuser from kids and to investigate, then she's not up to the responsibility. Right. Calling the allegations unproven is no excuse for leaving an alleged child abuser in close contact with children while lawsuits take years to go through the courts. Mr. Speaker, the Children and Family Services Act states that children are entitled to protection from abuse and neglect. Despite the Act, parents at the East Preston Daycare may feel their children were put in jeopardy. So my question to the minister, when it comes to the situation at the East Preston Daycare, did the minister fail to act appropriately, or was the Act not sufficient to safeguard the children?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as soon as we were informed of the alleged accusations, we took the appropriate route to go to the RCMP. It's a shame they're questioning RCMP's capacity and capability, but we went to the RCMP and they handled the situation based on the information and the investigation that they did. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in the case of the East Preston Daycare, something went wrong.
That's right. Something.
Preschoolers were put at an unnecessary risk. So my question to the minister, in the time that has passed, what changes has the minister made to ensure all kids are protected from alleged abusers?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, that proves my point, that it is very critical to get the RCMP involved as soon as we are aware of a situation, and that's exactly what we did.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
The minister has discussed this petition about hydraulic fracturing. When are you going to discuss it?
Order, please, order.
Oil and gas drilling.
Remove him.
To our ground, water, health, communities. Well, if you won't discuss it, we're going to discuss it now.
Remove him.
Water is threatened when wells are drilled. About 15 million liters of water is withdrawn from our river streams and makes up 20,000 pounds of chemicals, which is pumped in the ground.
At extremely high pressures, form fractures on the ground. These fractures can meet other natural fracture systems.
You'll have to speak up. Can't hear you. I think we'll take a little 5-minute break and we'll resume very shortly. Thank you. We will now adjourn for 5 minutes. The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is about fracking. Mr. Speaker, students and families are worried about the funding or the lack of funding for education in this province. The Premier recently told Nova Scotians that it was flat wrong to say his government was cutting education, despite gouging education funding by $65 million over the last 2 years. This government, this Premier, and this Minister of Education seem to be out of touch with Nova Scotians. People are worried about their children's education, and this government is flat wrong if it thinks they're not. So my question to the Minister of Education is this. Is slashing public education by $65 million a cut?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to make it very clear that we're dealing with declining enrollment in this province, and we are investing in our children. We are funding per student has gone up in this province. We are making sure that we're investing in our students' education. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to see that funding per student is going up. I would prefer it be spent in the classroom and not the Minister's office. School boards, Mr. Speaker, are being forced to cut programs, services, and staff. As recently as last night, one school board received a recommendation to cut 130 FTEs. Some of those were education assistants. The mood in that room last night, Mr. Speaker, was somber, but it was also filled with anger. Anger at this minister and anger at this government. Yet the minister continues to say that cuts will not affect the classroom. So my question to the minister, what will the minister say to those parents whose children will lose their education assistance support due to the, quote, don't care attitude towards students?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We recognize that school boards work for the best interest of their children in their school boards, and we entrust them to make the decisions based on their information on the children and their jurisdiction. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. School boards do make good decisions, but they make tough decisions when they don't have the money to support the programs they need. Mr. Speaker, the recent speech from the throne made no mention, not one mention, of students with special needs. This was a 20-page document, a little over one page devoted to education, nothing devoted to special needs kids. Children, Mr. Speaker, who are autistic can't be autistic half the time. They can't have learning disabilities half the time. But thanks to this government, if they're lucky, they might get an EA half time. Many EAs will be cut and students will not have those supports. The minister is an educator. She should know the value of support for students with learning disabilities. So my question to the minister is this. Why has she allowed the Minister of Finance to balance the books of the province on the backs of students instead of fighting for them?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are investing in our students, and we are investing in making sure that our students with special needs have the services that they need. We have increased our funding this year for and protected the funding for students with special needs. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Mr. Speaker, gas prices are at near record levels. People are getting gouged each time they stop at the gas pumps. Gas prices are driving up the cost of living in Nova Scotia. Nova Scotians are struggling, and this government continues to do nothing. This government is clearly out of touch. The decision made by this government to continue to inflate the cost of gasoline by nearly 5 cents per litre, savings that would help all families and also help our business to be much more competitive. My question is to the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Why does this government continue to be reluctant and continue this tax scheme that artificially inflates the price of gasoline?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The pricing structure that we have was put in place by the party opposite.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the NDP were once heavily opposed to this tax on gasoline. The finance minister called this a sneaky tax. A sneaky tax. And I will quote, it's something the government could choose to decouple. It's just something they choose not to because it's an easy way to grab a few million dollars in extra revenue. My question to the minister is, why does the NDP government continue to collect tax that his finance minister called sneaky?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
I suppose the answer could be similar. Is why is the former minister asking the question for the regime that they put in place when he was minister?
The Honourable Member for Preston.
The minister quickly forgets that it was the Conservative government, supported by the NDP government, that supported gas regulation, which artificially pumps the price of gas up. Mr. Speaker, the Premier agreed with the past statements of the Finance Minister. In a 2005 Daily News story, the current Premier said, the tax on tax was always an immoral application of taxation powers. That same Premier has 3 years now to correct us, but he's done nothing. The Premier went on to say, quote, the tax on tax is something that I have been committed to changing since I was first elected. I'll repeat that. The quote was, the tax on tax is something I have been committed to changing since I was first elected. That's a Premier. 3 years ago, he became Premier. My question to the minister is, the NDP have been in power for nearly 3 years. why has this government not removed the tax on tax that the Premier committed to doing when he was in opposition?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Look, I wouldn't say that at some point in the future we couldn't look at that tax on tax. My question would be to the member opposite.
Order. Are we finished?
Yeah, good point.
Are we all finished for the morning, or we're going to keep it up all morning? Well, I see the gallery was emptied out earlier. The same thing could happen in the chamber also this morning. I will now recognize the Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure why they're so opposed to me asking a question. It is question period. The question I asked the member opposite is what services to Nova Scotians would he like to see cut in order to change that tax?
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I watched the Minister of Community Services not answer questions in this House to the previous questions that were asked to her about the alleged child abuser in the East Preston daycare. The government apparently knew about this, according to media reports, since the fall of 2010. I'm trying to understand what the process was. Apparently they went to the RCMP, but why was not the East Preston Daycare made aware of this so that they could take some action on this as well? Is it that the legislation is not good enough? If the legislation is not good enough, then why didn't the minister bring forward some changes to that act to make sure that they protect the things that we keep so dear, which, of course, are our children?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I indicated, we followed the same protocol procedure as the Honourable Member would have followed when he was the Minister of Community Services, and that would be to take action immediately by going to the RCMP, and that was the appropriate action. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I know the Minister said that she's a parent, and I think most of us here are parents. And I think all of us here would understand the gravity of exactly what happened here at the East Preston daycare. And I think all of us would believe and understand that should an alleged abuser be found at an organization, that person would be temporarily removed even while an investigation is happening. So I want to know why the minister didn't alert the East Preston daycare or anyone in that community to this fact, or why didn't she change the act to make sure that children would be protected in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, once again, we took the route that was the appropriate route. Any of these issues, as I said, that are alleged are very concerning to us and to the department and to this government. And the appropriate protocol is to go to the RCMP, because that's the RCMP's job. They have the capacity, they have the means to investigate, and then they make the decision of where you go in the next step if there is any evidence to do that. So we took the exact appropriate process. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the minister is sticking very closely to her script to make sure that she doesn't say anything more than she needs to. You know, I think that this government let an alleged abuser work at a daycare without taking any true action to protect children that are in their care. They're hesitating about acting on information that they apparently received in the fall of 2010. This minister's inaction, I think, is disgraceful. Will the minister make immediate application under the Family and Children's Service Act to have it determined in court whether the alleged child abuser should be added to the child abuse registry?
The Honourable Member of Community, the Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, everyone loves and cares for children, and it's what we do in community service. We protect hundreds of children each and every day, and so we followed the process. This is the best process by going to the RCMP. It is an appropriate process because of the fact that the RCMP have the means to investigate, and they're the ones who are under the law. They know the law, and they took, and we took the appropriate steps to go to the RCMP, which is exactly what they would have done in this position. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, recently a review paper on modernization was released by Department of Fisheries and Oceans. The paper did not consider or discuss policies with respect to owner-operator or fleet separation, which has caused great concern for the Liberal caucus. Mr. Speaker, this omission has alarmed many independent operators in Nova Scotia, and apprehension continues to grow over the federal government's intentions towards these policies. The Liberal caucus asked for an emergency meeting of the Resources Committee on this very issue, and unfortunately, Department of Fisheries and Oceans officials have refused our invitation to appear. My question for the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture is, what is the government doing to address the concerns fishermen have with the federal government's plan on owner-operator initiatives?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Well, thank you very much, and I really appreciate the question. I don't think it could be any better timing on this. In fact, I think if the record proves, we want to go out and check it, that we were the first elected official to come out forcefully and firmly with the minister on this, that this is a cornerstone. This particular policy, the operator, owner-operator and fleet separation policy, is a cornerstone of the Atlantic fisheries. We understand this, Minister, Mr. Speaker, and we took this very forcefully to the Minister of Fisheries. We've asked for more time for consultation, and we're here to protect the communities and make life better for Nova Scotians. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, fishermen are concerned about the changes to employment insurance, which could have a devastating impact not only on license holders but on their crew that they rely upon, as well as those who work in fish processing facilities. Mr. Speaker, any potential alterations to our lucrative, important fishing industries are alarming. Independent operators in our province are concerned that large corporations may overwhelm our fishing sectors, which could reduce economic development and completely change a way of life for many Nova Scotians. So my question to the minister is, since becoming minister, what steps has the minister taken to support new entrants in buying licenses and fishing enterprises?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and it looks like the member opposite is tossing me some law balls here, because I appreciate this, because since being elected in 2006, I can assure the member opposite that the independent fishermen in Nova Scotia did not have access to capital. That has changed under this government. And also, Mr. Speaker, in his reference to the owner-operator policy and fleet separation policy, there's somewhat of a paper trail on our activity on this, and I just want to table a few documents, if I could. The first is from our neighbours to the north, the Maritime Fishermen's Union, who gives great praise to this minister and this government for taking the lead on this particular issue. I'll table that. I'll also table, Mr. Speaker, our federal friends, our NDP friends in Ottawa, who also brought this issue to the floor of the House of Commons. I'll table that for the member to read. And also, Mr. Speaker, coming from a community where the economic engine is the fishery, my own hometown, the municipality of the District of Barrington, is in strong favour of that and encourages the support that I have done, and I will table that. And I thank the member for the question.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, with all due respect, the minister would be aware that it was actually the previous government that made changes to the Fisheries Loan Board to allow independent operators to access capital to buy fishing licenses and fishing enterprises.
Not true. Oh, not true.
Mr. Speaker, there's no question that all members of this House support the owner-operator principle, but it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to put actions behind it. At the end of the day, we need to ensure that deckhands and others who wish to buy out owners have access to capital and the supports necessary to be able to do that. Changes were made by the previous government, but there is still more that can be done. So my question again to the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture, what new initiatives has he brought in since becoming minister that would help Nova Scotians purchase licenses and fishing enterprises here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I ask the member to listen closely to my answer here. Mr. Speaker, I entered politics at the provincial level at 2006. I campaigned on the issue of making sure that independent fishermen have access to capital. That got the attention of the previous third party right now, and we have achieved that. We will stand up for each community around Nova Scotia, whether you're from Cape Breton or Yarmouth, and I can assure you we stand up for the owner-operator policy, and we are going to be there because we're going to make life better for Nova Scotia. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, under repeated questioning, the Minister of Community Services says that she took the appropriate steps to inform the RCMP when her department became aware of a case of alleged child abuse. But that doesn't square with a letter from her own advisor on this matter. Mr. Speaker, I have with me, and I will table, a letter that was sent to Mr. Ray Wagner, a lawyer representing the victims of this alleged abuser, and the letter states as follows: I am a child protection lawyer advising and acting for the Minister of Community Services. Child protection agencies are not legally mandated to conduct the investigation you have requested, and no further steps will be taken in this regard. The letter further goes on to say that you or your clients should contact the RCMP if you believe a crime has been committed. That is the letter from Mr. Peter McVeigh, the advisor to the Minister of Community Services, clearly putting the onus on someone else to contact the RCMP. And so my question to the minister is a simple one. Who is wrong, the minister or her advisor, Mr. McVeigh?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, neither was wrong, because what the lawyer was explaining was the fact that under the child, under the Family and Services Act, that a complaint with respect to a child's abuse would be investigated by the Department of Community Services. That wasn't the case here, and so therefore it's an RCMP matter. And as I said, that our department did also contact the RCMP, and what the lawyer was expressing was the fact that if they had any further information to provide, that to the RCMP.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the RCMP will do their job, which is to conduct a criminal investigation. The East Preston Daycare, which found out through the news media in June 2011, immediately removed the alleged abuser from the daycare. They are doing their job. The problem is that the Minister of Community Services did not do her job, which is to protect those children from abuse the moment she knew it was occurring. My question to the minister is simply this: when, on what, the moment that she knew, to be fair, Mr. Speaker, to be fair, the moment she knew an alleged abuser was employed at the East Preston Daycare. So my question is simple: on what date did the minister or her department know an alleged abuser was working at the East Preston Daycare? Was it before June of 2011 when the daycare finally found out?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I said, as soon as I became aware and the department became aware, we took the action that's appropriate. We went to the RCMP and we informed the RCMP of our concerns. They did their work. Objectively, they do their investigation because they have the means to do that, and that's the appropriate route.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we accept that the RCMP will do a criminal investigation. That is their job. We accept that when the East Preston Daycare found out there was an alleged abuser in their midst from the media, that they removed that person from the scene. What we do not accept is that that minister let days or weeks or months go by when she knew there was an alleged abuser at the East Preston Daycare and didn't tell them. So my question is, why did she let all that time go by and not tell the daycare the risk that they were running?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
As I've said many times this morning, Mr. Speaker, that we immediately went to the RCMP. They did their investigation, and as we have said before, that when they did their investigation, they did not find anything on the record, and so they made their decision based on that, because at that time there wasn't anything on the record. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question's for the Minister of Health. You know, Mr. Speaker, in June of 2010, the Minister of the Environment promised concerned citizens in the Hillside Trenton area that a health study would be conducted on fly ash emissions from the Trenton Power Station. On March 24th, he wrote a letter and said, well, really, it wasn't his responsibility, but that the Minister of Health already had such a study underway. 1 year ago today, I asked the Minister of Health about this, and she said, quote, I haven't had an opportunity to meet with the residents of the Trenton area. However, if they request a meeting, I am certainly prepared to meet with them. And I'll table that from answer to last year. Mr. Speaker, can the Minister of Health please tell us whether that group has requested a meeting with her since 1 year ago today? And if so, whether that meeting has taken place?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have had correspondence with that group, and I indicated to them that if I was in the New Glasgow area and there was time in my schedule permitting a meeting, that I would be prepared to schedule something, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have not had an opportunity to do that. However, the chief medical officer in the Pictou County District Health Authority has been active on this particular issue and has provided me with the best medical advice from a public health perspective that's available to me. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as the Minister knows, the group has repeatedly since that year requested a meeting. While it's fine that the Minister suggested if she was in the New Glasgow area, she might meet with them. In fact, she was in the New Glasgow area on March 20th and was specifically asked by this group to meet during that time after committing repeatedly that she would meet with them, and they offered to come to Halifax to meet with the Minister. So, Mr. Speaker, why is the Minister avoiding this group from Trenton after she promised in this House that she would meet with them?
Good question. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I, as the Honourable Member probably would be aware, am asked to meet with many, many groups and individuals. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, my schedule does not permit me to meet with everybody who asks for a meeting. I do the best to accommodate people. I do set priorities in terms of what need to be addressed in making those decisions. And unfortunately, I have not been able to schedule time with this particular group, Mr. Speaker. But I will continue to look at my schedule and see if anything is available. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, like the fact that the NDP might reduce the HST after a future election, maybe the Minister of Health will meet with this group after some future election. You know, Mr. Speaker, the fact is the Minister stood in this House 1 year ago today 1 year ago today and committed to meet with this group. That group has made themselves available repeatedly to come to Halifax to meet with the minister, and the minister has admitted just moments ago that she said if she was in New Glasgow and had the time, that she would meet with them. And she was in New Glasgow on March 20th and knew about their request for a year before the time that she was in. If the minister could not schedule a meeting with someone with a year's notice, there's a real problem in that department. To Mr. Speaker, will the minister, this is a very serious issue, and I'm sure the minister is aware of this. They want to know the status of the study. Will the Minister of Health commit to meet with this group within the next month?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my answer remains the same, Mr. Speaker. I schedule meetings according to the time that is available in my schedule. I get requests from very many groups. Regrettably, I cannot accommodate every request that I have, and certainly in the next month it will be very difficult to schedule a meeting. We have the health estimates, Mr. Speaker, and we have a number of things underway. I'm booked, I think, at least 6 weeks in advance, Mr. Speaker, and I know that my secretary has a long list of organizations and individuals that are looking for an opportunity to meet, Mr. Speaker. However, I will continue to encourage that group to participate with the District Health Authority and the public health officials at the district level. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. The Minister of the Department of Community Services is confusing an RCMP investigation, a criminal investigation, with her duty to protect the kids at the East Preston Daycare the moment that she became aware that an alleged child abuser was working in their midst. The Department of Community Services knew for months that an alleged child abuser was working at the East Preston Daycare and did not inform the daycare. My question to the Premier, does he agree that it's okay for the department to know for months of this situation and fail to inform the daycare so they can protect those kids?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the department took exactly the right action. Once they were informed of the allegations, they went to the RCMP, who are the proper investigatory authority for the province of Nova Scotia. They have the means and the resources to do the kind of investigation that I think every Nova Scotian would expect to be done.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the department knew for months that an alleged abuser was working with kids at the East Preston Daycare and didn't bother to tell the daycare. My question to the Premier, what could possibly prevent the department from doing the right thing and instructing the daycare that they had an at-risk situation so that they could take the right steps and remove that person from the scene until the investigation was completed?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, when an allegation comes forward to the department, what they do with that allegation is take it to the RCMP. That is the appropriate protocol. In fact, Mr. Speaker, that is the protocol that was put in place when the Conservatives were in government.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if the Premier is hiding behind that legislation in order to leave a potential abuser or an alleged abuser in place at a daycare, then that is a real shame. So my question, after 3 years in office, if that is the problem, why not give yourselves the appropriate legislative tools so that daycares can be told the moment that someone finds out they're at risk? Because if his government won't bring in a bill like that, we will.
Here. The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, they didn't for 10 years when they were in government. That's the truth. Mr. Speaker, there is a process. There is a process, Mr. Speaker.
Order. Order, please. Order. Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I said, they didn't do it for the 10 years that they were in government. What we did, Mr. Speaker, is exactly what the protocol called for in the Department of Community Services. We went directly to the RCMP to allow them to conduct an appropriate investigation. And of course, one of the reasons why we have a public prosecution service in the province, of course, is to remove the politicization of these issues from government, and to ensure that there is a fair public authority that investigates allegations.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. We've learned the department is putting together a nutrient map of Nova Scotia soils with the potential to open up areas for whole tree harvesting. Mr. Speaker, would the Minister please explain why the NDP government is planning to allow whole tree harvesting to continue in Nova Scotia after two members said it wouldn't happen?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank the Honourable Member for the question. Yes, it's true. Through our natural resources strategy, we're looking at a new ecosystem management system for forestry in our province, including looking at the type of soils, the type of land that the trees can best grow upon. Some lands are better suited for growing softwood. Some are better suited for growing hardwood. Some are too rocky, some are too windy. You know, every type of landscape is different, and it's important that we get this right. And the rules around whole tree harvesting, the rules around clear cutting are part of our ecosystem management, and it's important that we consult with Nova Scotians, which we're doing with pulp mills and sawmills and woodlot owners and non-government offices and all Nova Scotians. So, yeah, it's ecosystem management is the basis of our good forestry policy in this province.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. Before I go to the government house leader to call business, I will recognize the Honourable Member for Halifax Citadel, Sabalainen, on an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have the pleasure to draw your attention and the attention of all members of the House to the presence in the East Gallery of Mr. Ian Johnson and members of the NSGEU Political Action Committee. They are Mr. Thane Paris from Halifax, Don Ferris from Coal Harbour, Norman Doucette from Halifax, Kim Henderson from Cherrybrook, Jonina Kennedy from Sydney, Bill Patterson from Centerville, Mike Thompson from Trenton, Deborah Wilkinson from Amherst, and Bill Zebedee from Dartmouth.